Right. So, as David said, the title of my talk is Statistical Mechanics and Error Correcting Codes. And first, I would like to explain to you what the problem of error correcting codes is. So, traditionally, so in the communication theory, so people consider the case somehow. Here they have some source which produces so information data, and we'll assume that, as usually is done, that these data are in digital form. So this is just A1, AK bits we want to transmit. So bits means zeros or ones, and of course, there is a trivial correspondence between zeros and ones and plus or minus ones. So we'll also use both notations. So sigmas are plus or minus ones, and trivially, sigma I equal minus one to the power ai. So, and the other correspondence I will use is that usually people consider modulo 2 additions of bits. So, for example, A1 plus A2 modulo 2, this just trivial corresponds, say, to sigma 1 times sigma 2, if we speak in the language of the spins. So I will use this sometimes it's more convenient to speak one language, sometimes it's more convenient to speak the other language. So these data are sent through transmission channel. And somewhere here we want to recover the data. Okay? Now usually in transmission channel there is noise and the data get corrupted. So there are several examples, so the nature of the noise is different. So for example, now when it could be so wireless communication will be, in the old days was telephone or telegraph, now it's wire telecation, or it is storing data on a computer hard disk or anything. Of course, the level of the noise is not the same in all the different communications. So, and because the noise of the noise corrupts the data, of course we want to recover the data without the corruption. And already Shannon, in his famous papers in the late 40s, told us that an efficient way of doing it is to encode so the source. So to put some here, an encoder here. So what does the encoder? The encoder introduces redundancy into the data. And so the sigmas here, which were, are transformed to some kind, I call it j's, the symbols, plus or minus ones, j1, jn, where n, of course, is larger than k. So an error correcting code is just the deterministic algorithm which transforms the sigmas into the j's. Now, after the output, we'll get, so this was the input, we'll get the same number of outputs here, and then we have to go through a decoder to try to reconstruct what the message was. And I call again the message sigma 1, sigma n, but d, which means the message I got after decoding, which, of course, ideally I would like the decoded message to be the same as the one which sent, but this is not always the case. Okay, now a very important parameter is what is called the rate of the channel. The rate of the channel is just the ratio k over n, which means how much redundancy measures in the inverse of the rate is just the amount of redundancy I have introduced in my coding. Okay. So what is a code? A code is just a map. Okay, here I said that my source it produces k bits, so those are the points of the hypercube. There are 2 to the power k such points. So any point of this is any possible represents any possible message my source has produced. Okay? And then I'm going to a much larger space, the hypercube, so 2 to the power n, which were my code words. So people talk source words, the messages produced by the source, and code words, so the sequences which has been produced by the coding procedure. So the code words sit on much larger space, but because there are fewer so source words, not every point in this larger space corresponds to a code word. So only the blue points here correspond so to a code word. And then we can you, because of the noise, I mean, if this was sent, we'll get some point somewhere, not exactly the same point after decoding. So in this won't be in the hypercube because the noise can be continuous. So these hypercubes are embedded in larger r to the n space. So it could be some. So we can imagine a decoding algorithm, and Shannon imagine a decoding algorithm. So we draw a circle around the code words, and then if our output is inside the circle, we say, okay, that's how we decode. That's our decoding algorithm. Okay? And if it falls outside, we say it's an error. Or if there are two circles which intersect and it falls in the intersection of the two circles, we say this is an error. Okay? So that's ideal. I mean, how you could represent so coding and so. Now there are mathematical models for the noise. So in the theory of communication, mathematical theory of communication, the noise is just a probabilistic event. So we'll consider as is usually what is called a memoryless channel, which means that we send this sequence here. So we have some probability, which is called the transition probability of the channel, that if we have sent this vector to get some vector, some output vector here, and the channel is called memoryless if this transition probability factorizes. So this will be, we'll assume that. So this is the ith component, just depend of the ith of the input. And furthermore, which is assumed that those transition probabilities are known. How you, in practice, what you do, you know, you send a message, and you know what message you send, and you measure the output. So you measure experimentally, for example, this transition probability. Okay, so there are different mathematical models. So people talk about channels. So for this transition probability, so the a channel which is the Gaussian channel, which is very often so considered, and we consider in the following. proportional, just as it is said, g out minus g in square over 2w. This is just so a Gaussian probability, or there are other channels, which is called the erasure channel, which says that some symbol has been erased, so we don't know, but the ones who have not been erased are transmitted without error. Or there is another channel which is called the binary symmetric channel, which means that, so what you are getting, for example, you're just taking the sign of the output, so you get a plus or minus one. Here the output is a real number. And then we say that with probability 1 minus p, you get the correct result. With probability p, this has been shifted. OK, so there are different models of the mathematical models of the channel. And then I would like to mention a very famous theorem of Shannon, who founded, I mean, the field. And this is in his famous paper in 48. So I'll state the theorem is more general, but I state the theorem for the Gaussian channel here. So this is for the Gaussian channel. And the theorem say, consider a Gaussian channel, so, and a random code. So what means a random code? I showed you before that the code is just a map. So pick one map at random of rate R. So,
at random means uniform probability over
the. So we pick the points at random. So you pick every source word, and we decide at random at which code word corresponds to this source word until you do that for the whole set of.
So that's the thing that's partitioning n in k chunks randomly.
It's a. So just you choose at random, say, to which point, to which one corresponds in the other space. So take a random code in this sense, as I said, with of rate R. OK? And consider the decoded algorithm outlined before. OK? You draw circles with the appropriate radius. OK? And then the theorem said, OK, there is a variance of the noise, a critical variance of the noise, which is given by this formula. You see, W is the variance of the noise. This defines, the rate is given, so this defines WC. And so for every W smaller than WC, that's what the theorem says, and for any positive epsilon, there exists some integer N0 such for every N larger than N0, the error probability is 0. The error probability average over this ensemble, the bar means average over this ensemble of random codes. Okay? And furthermore, if W is larger than WC, no such code exists. You cannot.
You probably mean P is 0 or is less than epsilon?
Excuse me? It's less than epsilon. I'm sorry. Which means that for every large n, you can't make the error probability as small as you want. So for infinite sequences, you can communicate error-free. OK, so.
Does it know how n0 is related to epsilon? It must be known.
In some cases. OK. So you see that is very strong result, very surprising. Of those days, because people were considering that their probability goes to zero continuous with the noise, as the noise decreases. But here you see you can get, even for finite noise, you can get zero error probability. And the other thing which is surprising, that if you choose this is the average error, which can be small. So which means if you choose a code at random, a map at random, you can achieve this. Okay? No, so we say what the problem is there. What is the problem? If any random map so is a good code. So the problem is decoding, in fact. If you pick just, if you try to implement this decoding algorithm I gave to you, it has been shown that this is an incomplete problem. In order to get small error, you have to go to get to larger n, so it is extremely complicated, impossible to decode. I mean, if n is very large. So you have to limit, so one has to limit ourselves to decodable codes, the ones we know to how to decode. And there was a joke in the field that say any code is good except the ones who know how to decode. And this was true until in the mid-90s, and then it has been really a big breakthrough in the mid-90s, first with the discovery of turbo codes, which have been invented by Beru and Glavieux in 93-94, and also by the rediscovery of low-density parity check codes, first discovered by Gallagher in his thesis in 62. And nobody believed, I mean, okay. I will later in my talk, I hope there will be time, I will present those codes. Okay? So before that, so let me show how people show the results traditionally in the field. Here is the error probability per bit on the left, and this is the signal to noise ratio. Here, usually people present that in decibels, so in the engineering community. And those are different codes. This would be the error, the error who gets without using any code, this line here, and these are some other old codes, and you see what. First of all, you see that there are good and bad codes. All of those are with the same redundancy. You see, for some codes, you get this error probability, but there are other codes for which you get a lower error probability. And for, so why not use it? So this code, for example, is much better, is because it needs some more computational resources in order to decode it. Okay? So those are the old codes. So I was lazy to redraw the diagram. And here are the new codes. And this is taking those people tried to break the record. In fact, this is the record. And of course, so you should see that the scales are not the same here. Eh? I did not redraw. So this the scale is decibel. You see here you have sub-tenths of decibels as a scale, and this here is what is given by the Shannon limit here, this line here, and you see how close to the Shannon limit now people, of course, this is just a demonstration and it requires a very, very important computer effort in order to decode that, but this gives you that really shows you that the field has really completely changed, so in the last years. First, I would like, before showing you those codes, the new codes, I would like to show you some old codes to see how and to illustrate the argument. So the most trivial code I could give you is what's called a repetition code. Okay, so the sigmas is the ones we want to transmit. So what we do, we transmit the sigmas three times, for example. So J, so here is sigma I, we transmit three times, J1I equals sigma I, J 1, 2 equals sigma I, ji 3 equals sigma I. Okay, so if this has rate 1/3, and now you get the outputs, you sum the thing and you pick the sign of the output. That just the decoding algorithm, this is a trivial algorithm, decoding, so that's the most trivial code you can think of. And so on the other hand, it's worth seeing that the code words obey some constraints. So in this case, the constraints are trivial, that so K I G L I, K L is 1 to 3 equal 1. Okay? Because it's equal to sigma I square is equal to 1. Okay? So that's the trivial example. A less trivial example is what it's just a simple example of what is called convolutional codes. So these have redundancy rate 1/2. So J1K equals sigma K minus 1, sigma K minus 2. And okay, maybe because I'll use that, I'll write it here. So this is this convolutional code. Okay. That's another example, and I will talk about the decoding algorithm of this later. And again, you see that there is a constraint between the J's. You can verify that all the J's verify these constraints. So those two examples are particular case of very general family of codes, which are called linear codes. Okay? So now I'm going to use the bit language instead of the speed language here. So the A's, which were the bits, are encoded into some larger vector U, and this is done as follows. So I'm giving, okay, so I'm saying U is called, there is some matrix here which defines the code, which is called the generating matrix A. Of course, this is not a square matrix because there are more U's than there are N's. And this multiplication, the elements of this generated matrix are zeros or ones, and the multiplication is modulo 2. Okay, so you produce again the U's are zeros or ones. So now, if you translate that into the J's, to the spin, so this a relation like that, that's JK. Okay, this modulo 2 addition amounts, as I said before, to spin multiplication. So there is some connectivity matrix here that K, I, K1, I, K, L, for example, sigma I, K1, okay. So this is the encoding, okay, for those linear codes. Now, as in the previous case, you see all, because there are much more many so J's than there are sigmas, all of the J's, there are no linear independent, there are constraints, and just the generalization of this, there exists some matrix H such that H times U, which is not a square matrix, is equal to 0 modulo 2, okay, which is just the generalization of that. And this, if you write in terms of the components, it transforms to some relation like that, that there exists, again, some connectivity here, MK. Such that there are some products, so there are constraints of this form, that the products are equal to 1. And essentially, all the codes which are used are linear codes. And then also there is a theorem which says that random linear codes are good as the general random codes. Okay. Now, where is statistical mechanics here? Up to now, there was no statistical mechanics appear. So now, in order to see statistical mechanics appearing, we have to consider the decoding problem. I didn't say anything about decoding. So decoding here is a statistical inference problem. Okay, we know the code, which means you know those constraints, and you know the channel outputs, and you know the characteristics, statistical properties of the noise, and you want to infer what was said. Because the noise is memoryless, let's consider a single bit, the case of a single bit. Okay, so if J was sent, it's plus or minus 1, we got a real number, J out here. Okay, and what we know that the probability to get the transition probability of the mat, the probability, yes, of the channel, this. Okay, we know. Now, what we would like to know, what is the probability that if we observe this, the output, that I was sent. Okay? So we want to know what is the probability of G that was sent when we got this output. And then in order to compute this, we apply Bayes' theorem, which says that this is just Q G out G normalized, which means the sum of the Qs of two values, sum over G, which is just two terms here. Okay. Now, we can take the logarithm of this. And remember, this can take the value plus or minus 1 only, the input. So this, the most general function, is a linear function. Okay, this is A plus H J, because J squared is equal to 1. And you can compute what H is. It's a trivial combination. H is 1 half log qj out 1 divided by qj out minus 1. So you know the output. So you can, so this here, so can be written e to the minus hj. And you see already some resemblance with statistical mechanics. This is a spin and this is a field. Okay, a magnetic field. So we can. Now, after this.
Let me ask a question. So the only difference between J out is only the transmission, right? So all you've done here is adding the noise.
Exactly.
So far.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, let's suppose now we can compute what is the probability that this code word was sent when we got this output. Okay? So this, first of all, in order to be a code word, it has to obey all those constraints. Otherwise, it's not a code word. Okay? So the constraints are here. So it's this probability proportional, the product of all of those constraints here, mk, I'm going to write j, j, j. I'm not writing the indices. And then for every j is sum over I, hi, ji. Okay, this is straightforward. And now we can take the logarithm of this probability. So log of p is just sigma I, hi, ji, plus u, we replace these constraints by soft constraints. We put a ferromagnetic coupling, infinitely strong. Okay. Sum over k, mk, g, 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 g. Okay. So you see immediately that the logarithm of this probability has the form of a spin Hamiltonian. Here we have infinite ferromagnetic couplings, and here we have external fields. So what the couplings are, this depends on the code, which the constraints are depends on the code, and what the value of the magnetic fields is, this depends on the channel output. And we see immediately that this probability, the logarithm of this probability, is just a spin Hamiltonian. And then we can do the same thing, change variables and go. So we change variables. We write the j's here, what they were, the definition. So if we do that, all the constraints are automatically satisfied. So the term of the constraints drops. And what we get, that the logarithm of the source word now, tau, that this was transmitted is just sum over I, h I, sigma I, dot, 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 tau, tau, tau. And you see here the constraints have disappeared. What exactly, what these couplings are, how, which spins are coupled, is given by the code, is given just by this coefficient, see here. And the couplings here are given by the channel output, and this is a multi-spin spin glass Hamiltonian, you have realized. Okay, so this clear general correspondence, so between models which are familiar playing with and error correcting codes. Okay. Now maybe of course, immediate consequence of that is that the most probable sequence is the ground state of those Hamiltonians. Okay, that's immediate sequence. Okay, you want, we decode, we decide to choose the j's which maximize this probability, which means we have to find, okay, you maximize the probability, maximize the logarithm of the probability, then it is a ground state. This is minus the Hamiltonian, okay? Of the Hamiltonian. Furthermore, there is another less obvious but still, I mean, correspondence which says that if, say, let's suppose that I'm not interested in the whole sequence. I'm interested in a single symbol, which is the most proper value of a single spin. So people in probability say I marginalize, so which means I'm summing over all possible values of the other. Of the other variables, each one weighted, each sequence weighted with its probability. Then it is very easy to show that, so it's symbol decoding what people say, so maximum probability symbol decoding. In that case, it's given by the sign I of the magnetization MI of this Hamiltonian, which the magnetization is computed at beta equal 1, which means I'm summing over all sequences. I'm marginalizing, means I'm summing over all sequences, each one weighted by its probability. So there is no Okay, and okay, it turns out.
What are J-outs? J-outs are not hidden in H's?
Exactly. J-outs are the H's. And in fact, I should write it for that the case of the. It's very simple. For the Gaussian channel, here you can. So from this formula here, for the Gaussian channel, H is very simple, is J just J out divided by W, where W is the noise, the variance of the noise. So this is a very simple relation. Now, I would like to point out another relation, because there is a program on lattice gauge theories going on simultaneously, that there is gauge invariance, so in this problem. And what is the where is the gauge variant appears? So now I'm taking this formula here. So I'm putting Hi for the Gaussian. I'm certain that Hi is G out 1 over W. And then I'm writing what G out was. So this is 1 over W, G in plus delta G, which is the noise. So for the moment, I'm forgetting so what the noise delta G is, but this is just C times sigma, 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 which were the word which was transmitted. So I have a coupling which is C, sigma, 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 plus delta G, tau, tau, tau. So you see, if I'm ignoring, so this is 1, okay, so if I'm ignoring the noise, this is a pure gauge. So the problem, if you can think of that, is you have a Hamiltonian, which is a pure gauge plus noise. Okay, the noise is small. And what you try to do is to find the pure gauge, which is closest, I mean, the ground state. Of course, if you have something which is a pure gauge, the ground state of the Hamiltonian is just the gauge transformation, okay? So tau equal to sigma. Okay, you see there is a relation to, there is a hidden gauge invariance to the problem. So I'm closing the the parentheses. And I will say something about decoding now. Yes. Let's now, in the general case, so the noise, the channel probability, the delta J is the same irrespective of that this is plus or minus 1. So people call symmetric channel. Okay? So the probability to make an error does not depend whether you send a plus 1 or a minus 1. Okay? In that case, the error probability is the same for all messages. And you can, if you want to compute it, you can consider the case that you send all the ones, okay, through the channel. If this is the case, let's suppose that the decoding algorithm, okay, has produced a sequence like that, sigma so k, d means the sequence which has been produced by the decoding algorithm, and if I'm getting the magnetization, which is 1 over n, sigma plus that, you see that the error probability is given very simple in terms of this magnetization, is just 1 minus md divided by 2. Okay, you see, if you find in this case, you send all the ones that the magnetization, for example, said ground state magnetization was 1, there is no zero error probability. Okay, this is a very simple relation, which means the following. If you are able to compute the ground state magnetization of this Hamiltonian as a function of noise, then you are able to compute what the error probability of your code is. So that's where statistical mechanics enters. So we have Hamiltonian. And if we are able to compute what is the magnetization of this Hamiltonian, we are able to compute what the error probability is using, I mean, this code. Okay? As a function signal to noise ratio. And before presenting the new codes, let me just for fun, I introduce this convolutional code here. Okay? So what is the Hamiltonian which corresponds, say, for the Gaussian for this code? You can just play the output is so sigma I J1 I so the I minus tau minus 2 plus J2. So those are the outputs, this Gaussian channel. There is, so H is equal to the output. In this case, we said there is 1 over W in front, and the other one, I. So we see that this, which was a convolutional code, the corresponding Hamiltonian is one-dimensional spin chain. Okay? And this is general for all convolutional codes. And all of the curves I showed you before in this performance, they were one-dimensional. They were convolution, different convolutional codes, and they're differing how many the range here of the interaction. So what is the decoding algorithm? How do we find the ground state of this? The transfer matrix. Okay, we know an algorithm, which is exact in this case, how to find the thing. So it happens that this algorithm was discovered independently communication theory in 67 by Viterbi, and it's called the Viterbi algorithm. And the Viterbi algorithm, Mr. Viterbi, became an extremely wealthy person thanks to the Viterbi algorithm. And he's one of the founders of Qualcomm, if you know the Qualcomm, I mean, one of the big companies so in communication theory. And so, and then if you want the temperature one, so to do the maximum symbols so decoding, this is called BCJR algorithm, and this is temperature one. Now, when I gave this talk in Princeton, there were a lot of information theory people present, and they jumped up and say, who discovered first? And then Elliot Lieb was there and says, I will tell you after the talk. And then Elliot Lieb came after the talk, and he said that, so the general, so the transfer matrix as a concept for the translation invariant case, which is really a matrix, okay, you could decolonize the matrix, has been proposed by three papers independently in 41. One is Montrol, another one is Kramers and Vanier, the same people who did the duality, and also Lasset and Howe. So this was in 41, but this is not, this did not give the algorithm because this was just the concept. But there was a person I didn't know named Schmidt in 57, who discovered the algorithm. So he considered the following problem, a chain of harmonic, coupled harmonic oscillators with random masses. And it's to me, it's unbelievable that, so this was just the beginning of the computers, okay? This is 57, that this person considered this problem and found the algorithm. So back in 57. So this is the story about this algorithm. And now maybe, yes, I don't have much time left. But first, I want to introduce the new codes. Okay. So first, I'll consider the low density parity check codes of Gallagher. So Gallagher starts saying, I will consider the parity check constraints. Okay, so it was those constraints, but I told you that there were equations like that. Okay, the U's are the code, the letters, the code word letters, and there is a matrix, there are Bay constraints that there is some modulus 2 equal 1. So, and we'll consider the case of I'm picking H as a random matrix, but very sparse random matrix. So not to get mixed, what is called K and L. So all the elements, this is a very large matrix, all the elements are zero, except that there are L1s per column, and M1s per row. So M and L are small numbers, 5, 6, things like that. Okay? And this, the size can be 10 to the 5 or something like that. You see, it's extremely sparse matrix. And this defines my code. Okay? And if you work out the rate of the code, which redundancy, I mean, this code R, is so already you see that there is something which is probably you don't appreciate immediately. The natural way of defining code is to give the generating matrix, to give how you define the code words in terms of, and not to give the constraints they obey. Okay? So in fact, that's an extremely clever thing that he considered the constraints, and he considered that this constraint matrix is the sparse one. If you take the other matrix to be a sparse one, you get a bad code. Okay? So, if you wrote that, so this is a sparse matrix. So what is the corresponding Hamiltonian? So you have a small number of ferromagnetic spins, so it's L spins, so but L is small, so 5, 6 or something, on a random graph, obeying ferromagnetic constraints in a random field. So this is a very simple, so Hamiltonian. And in fact, it can be solved by using statistical mechanics, methods of statistical mechanics. And what do you find? That in this Hamiltonian, there is a phase transition. Okay? So there is a phase transition, which means there is a threshold, theta, such that if the noise is smaller than theta, the magnetization is zero. And if the noise is bigger than theta, the magnetization is one. Excuse me, it's the opposite. So,
intuitively from the code to have a very sparse matrix of constraints? How should I think about it?
That's the definition. We can see when we discuss decoding. Okay, we'll discuss in shorter. So you see there is, so in this code we can get zero error probability. You see first of all that in order to have something like Shannon's theorem, where the error probability is zero, so for a large range of noise levels, means has been non-analytic. Otherwise, you cannot get an analytic function which is zero somewhere and non-zero in another domain. Okay? So you must have, so in statistical mechanics, in the language, you must have a phase transition. Otherwise, there are no singularity. And you see those convolutional codes which were one-dimensional spin models, there is no phase transition. You could not get something like that. Okay? Now, furthermore, in the case when, so M and L goes to infinity with the ratio fixed, the thing which measures the redundancy is just the ratio. This, so this theta can, in general case, can be computed through replicas. Okay, I'm not going to explain what the replica method is. But in this particular case, it can be solved without replicas. The method is similar to Derrida's method of solving the random energy model. And as David knows, I mean, there is, of course, there are some cases, nice cases, where you can solve with both methods. So in this case, in this limit, this you can solve as without replicas. But in the general case, you can solve with replicas. And furthermore, you can do a large expansion KL around infinity. And you get this result here. I should mention that this solution, like of the model, this correspondence with random energy model, and also the large KNL expansion, is due to Andrea Montanari. And you get that this is for the binary symmetric channel, which means that you change the probability that your channel flips, say, one bit is p. That's the critical p, if p is smaller than this, where the transition occurs. So p infinity is the Shannon limit, okay, for the infinite. And you see that this is, this is exponential. So the approach is exponential to the limit. It's very, and you see you have an expression, and of course you can compute other terms. Yeah. And you see that this approach to this limit is very good, it's very fast. Now, I didn't say about decoding. I said the problem is decoding. How do you decode these algorithms? The code, as I say, is equivalent. Okay, there are cases where you can, from H, the matrix H, you can find the matrix G. So you take those particular cases when you can construct the matrix G. Okay, and you correspond.
What does G look like?
Is infinite speed coupling, of course, in order to have a phase transition. Okay, it's not a few spin couplings. Okay, the fact that H is sparse,
so it's
G. Yes, it's very complicated.
Okay. That's
okay.
Very unintuitive.
Very unintuitive.
And it's not Markovian.
It's very unintuitive. But that's why I said the clever idea is we take the H matrix and take the H matrix sparse, which was not at all obvious. Now, there is, in order to understand decoding, there is a graphical representation. People in coding theory call that a Tanner graph. So we have the J's here, and here are the points here, the circles, the different J's, and we have the constraints. And so in the same graph, we represent the spins and the constraints here. The constraints, for example, let's suppose that the constraints was J1, J3, J9, J11, the product has been to B1, so that's the constraint here. We put J1, J3, etc. is equal 1, and you have the other constraints here. So, and the algorithm is an iterative algorithm. So in the beginning, at time 0, say, we know what's the probability of any one of those guys is exponential h I times ji. But now we see, look, J1 belongs to those two constraints. Okay, so, and we know what the probability of the other guys participating into the constraint is. So, using this fact, we can update our estimate what the probability of J1 is. Okay? So time here are the steps of the algorithm. We have that at time equal 0, this was what we got from the channel output. Okay? For example, for a Gaussian channel, this was G out I divided by W. Now I'm writing the constraints. I have, so at time equal 1, I'm writing those relations looking at my graph. So that's some function, so phi, which I'm able to compute, of which depends on the edges with all the spins which are connected to the spin I by the constraint, okay, of some edges taken at time equal 0. And of course, I can iterate that going outwards in my graph at distance 2. This is distance 1 and distance 2. And in general, I can establish this type of relation. That's the algorithm at t is some function phi where the h is half at t minus 1. Okay? And so the idea is look to fixed point of those equations, and if you find the fixed point, that's my decoding. Okay? This is called the sum product algorithm, and as I said, was established by Gallagher in his thesis in 62. And this is very unusual for the coding theorem. First of all, there is no theorem telling you that this was going to converge. Okay? People in coding theory used to be very mathematical and like to have theorem. Although Gallagher is very respected, he's a very famous man. So in the field, in his thesis, he had the idea of looking to something he could not prove and postulate that this could work. And in fact, it does work. Now, let me finish something. Now, if you work down and you look to those equations, then there is something strange. Not very strange, but you see that those are the zero temperature for tap equations. In fact, Gallagher had invented tap, are well-known equations in spin glasses, Thouless, and of course then has been generalized to the cavity equations by Mezar, Parisi, and Virasoro. So, in this case, Gallagher discovered the tap equations in 62 already. And then you ask, why do they converge? Why this does work? Okay, we know, after all, that the tap equations are mean field type equations. Why mean field equations work at all in this problem? So the easy answer to this question, but which is not the whole answer, is look, here we have a random graph. So locally, a random graph looks like a tree. The loops are large in random graphs. So we know that mean field equations are exact, so in mean field theory, on a tree. So that's why it works. In fact, this is not completely true. The reason is what is large here. N, for example, the length of the sequence. It's very large, take 10 to the 7, for example. That's a very long sequence. What is the number, what is the length of the loop? So in that thing, it's typically log n. So L, the length of the loop, is typically 10. Okay? Now, here, in every step of your iteration looks at a distance, so farther one. How many iterations in practice do you have to do in order to find a fixed point? Turns out you have, depends of course on the noise, but in realistic cases, you have to do 200 iterations. So you see the loops. So it's not completely understood why the algorithm works in this case. So there have been people who are, so this is an active, there have been mathematicians or applied mathematicians work. So there is some idea that the algorithm works if there is a unique state dependent of the loop, so which is a reasonable state. So after all, here we are not in the spin glass phase, so in the ferromagnetic case. That's what interests us. And so it's not so unreasonable to say that in this region there is a unique state. That's why our algorithms find that. But there is another possibility. Okay, I should say first, I would say the computation of this threshold by statistical mechanics, say that's what you can get, but it doesn't tell you how to get it. does tell you what algorithm you have to find it. So it tells you that if you have a very good algorithm, the optimal algorithm, you find this result. Now, it's a big open question whether the algorithm we have is the optimum algorithm to get that. And from our experience in disorder systems, we know that maybe there is another threshold, small theta, smaller than the larger the threshold of larger theta, where metastable states appear. So people in statistical mechanics call about dynamical transitions, so or aging phenomena, and then our algorithm would be stuck on another threshold, which is different from the optimum threshold. And in fact, this has been observed also in the codes, and I would say that this subject is an active subject of active research. And last year here, there was a program centered on disorder system, aging phenomena in disorder systems, which last for how much, 3 months, something like that. So this is an active subject of research. Furthermore, this, I don't have the time to elaborate on that, but this correspondence between, say, behavior of algorithms, a dynamic behavior of physical system, can be, in many cases, has been established. And also, this is a subject of active research now. And I think our intuition, so from physics, help us to understand about the behavior of the algorithms. And then I would like probably to finish with a last transparency, with some open. So here, I mean, it's completely open question is, we talk about whether the algorithm converges or not, but we didn't say anything, how long, what is the number of iterations we need in order to converge. So what we expect, if there is some dynamical threshold here, that this number of iterations will depend on the signal-to-noise ratio, the third, and then on n also. So we must have some curve like that, and nothing is known. And even people have not considered so this question. Also, the finite size effect, because we have finite size, is very new. People in coding theory are starting. We are physicists, introduced to them the notion that of finite, if you have phase transition, you can have finite. People were just showing curves for different n, for different noises, not trying to make a scaling to see whether they fit. So there is a whole field which is so completely open. So here, and I don't know if you give me one more minute, I would give you what turbo codes are. So this is one family of the disparity check codes. And so this is, in fact, this is the first family which has been. So it turns out that, again, this gives, I think, an interesting. So here you get, that's a simplest example, you get, in order, first of all, to define a turbo code, you have n bits. You consider a random permutation of, so artificially you construct a second sequence, information sequence, which is generated by random permutation, so of the n bits, and which is just the permutation pi, and this defines the code, okay? And of course you know the permutation. So because the code is convolutional code, yes, you do treat convolutionally both sequences, okay? So the Hamiltonian you write down is this is for one sequence, this is the permuted sequence. And of course, you have, if you try that, you have the constraint, because those are not different sequences. Okay, and this, I'm going very fast, I don't have the time to explain why it is though. There is this constraint here, that this product of sequence should be equal to this, with L is the permuted side of K. I don't have time. If you want, this is inverse, it's lengthy. It would take some time to.
The
to.
But are not just sigma, permuted sigma.
No, they are not. Yes. Okay. And you see, this is an unusual model of statistical mechanics. Here you have two chains with this funny looking so constraint, and the way you decode is you use transfer matrix to find what the product, the most probable value in an external field. You assume that all those guys are independent, which they are not, and you put that as a coupling to the second chain, and you iterate. So, and you expect to find the. Okay, I think I'll stop here. I gave you just a flavor. I mean, of
this also saturates. Right?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Started with Shannon's theorem.
Yes.
Is there a statistical mechanical argument for that theorem?
In fact, if you look, Shannon's proof is in the spirit of statistical mechanics, because you do all the random.
Is the theorem, is it translatable to some theorem we know in statistical mechanics?
So some people have considered random maps in statistical mechanics in terms of random maps. So you can say that this is a precursor of those. So it was very modern in 48. So statistical mechanics people thought about this much later than he did.
This gauge invariance that you mentioned, that reflects the constraints, I suppose, between the variables.
Or how you construct the, yes. So you can say that without noise, you construct a pure gauge Hamiltonian.
Yeah, right.
And in fact, it's how I got to the business. In fact, it's not the way I present it here, because I was coming from gauge theories at that time. Yes?
So part of the reason you said does not depend on the data source, right? But you mentioned some data sources are easier to code decode than others. So the question is, if you have a given algorithm, can you find the data source which works best for that algorithm?
Okay. So I didn't have the time to elaborate on that, but this was one. So all the field until recently has been done like that. There is another theorem by Shannon, which is the channel, Shannon channels theorem. There is source coding theorem by Shannon, again the same thing, which says that if you have a source which produces some data with some entropy, you can compress the data, to make all the bits independent. So how the game is played now is first you compress your data of the source to remove any redundancy where the bits are independent. So, and then you play the game as I showed here. Okay, so this assumes. Now the question you are asked is, can I combine the two? Okay, so people until very recently, people in information theory have not considered this case. Okay. Now, instead, compressing my data to remove the redundancy and then introduce a new redundancy, could I compress less or something? Okay, because my data are not compressed completely, and there may be cases where the redundancy, which was originally in your data, and the type of noise you have match somehow. I'm not familiar with that, but I know that this is a recent type of work which is going on, and you could somehow combine in one stage the two stages, which was the first compression and then encoding. Yes?
So practically speaking, in communication systems, what is the state of the art that people are using? So are these decoding algorithms, the iteration is so expensive in time that actually the bit rate that you have, it's actually much lower than theoretical ones, or are people just using linear?
Good question. It depends very much on the applications. Mm-hmm. Okay? There are nothing was known. When turbo codes were first proposed in 94, they were used immediately before that by NASA. Because the price, if you have something to put into space, so I heard the claim, but using turbo codes, they made, in that case, computing is cheap because computing is on Earth. What is expensive is sending power so to the sky. They were saving $80 million per satellite by just using those codes. So they used them immediately. Okay, now the so other applications have different constraints. Okay, now for example, take another example of an application which is a mobile phone communication. What is the most severe constraint in that case? Then it's time, because if you talk to somebody, you cannot afford to wait your telephone to decode so for the signal just to you want. So. From what I have been told, once I talked to people with Motorola, they said that so they have decided that the maximum they can afford for decoding is 30 milliseconds. Okay, otherwise people are uncomfortable saying talking over the phone. On the other hand, you can allow for larger errors. Okay, so. And then the compromise is the use, let's say that in the new generation, because turbo codes were the first one to be discovered, they are part of the new standard now in mobile phone communication. And I think they, in order to compromise, they have to not use very long sequences, so of the order 500. Okay, some they can decode faster, okay, to find, so you have to find a compromise. Okay, so depends very much on the constraints. Practical constraints are different for different applications. Yes?
With the natural sequence, it's not that you just need to do a lot more computations if you get a very long sequence. It's also you have to wait until the sequence arrives.
Yes, so yes. That's only that, and then the number. Probably you expect also that if any smaller, you need fewer iterations to decode. And okay, there's a combination of factors, yes. Other question?
Okay, let's take Nicholas.
Thank you.